Welcome to episode 26 of the Clearly KC podcast, featuring information about life with keratoconus. I'm your host, Dr. Melissa Barnett. Today we are joined by Mark, who's an inventor, founder, and everyday user of LensBase. So we're going to learn all about LensBase. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So we're here to talk about your clever invention for applying scleral lenses. But first, I'd like to know a little bit more about your journey with keratoconus.
Of course. I think the first time I heard of keratoconus was as a snowboarding coach. One of the athlete's brothers had keratoconus. And he was one of the three siblings that was sort of uninvolved in the sport and was a bright and athletic kid, but he really had to pull back from so many things because of keratoconus. And it was presented as this wildly rare disease. And I was like, oh, that's a bummer. And I even remember back then hearing his glasses don't really do much, but he can't get his contacts in. So he just has to live with this subpar vision. And within 5 years of that, I myself, who'd gone from having perfect vision all the way into my early 20s, all of a sudden found myself squinting at some things. I had just gotten into grad school and I had to pull back. I went from 20/20 to like 20/70 in just 2.5 or 3 years. It was really, really frustrating. I couldn't do so many of the things I wanted to do. Snowboarding specifically, there's situations where you're in very low contrast light. And for a keratoconus patients, that's a nightmare.
Right.
And it was misdiagnosed for, I think, 3 years, because I think I was 26 or 27 by the time I got the right doctor and the right lens. People laugh when they hear this now, but at the time they thought it was pellucid, which is almost like the opposite. It's related to corneal thinning as well.
You mentioned a few things. One that is that keratoconus is not very common, but we know now that it is so incredibly common. And there have actually been some recent studies just this year showing how common it is. So it is important for everyone, and I'm saying this to all eye doctors here, to be aware and be on the lookout for keratoconus in every single patient. There are ways to do this even without any fancy technology. Of course, we do have fancy technology like corneal tomography to image the front part of the cornea and the back part of the cornea, but we can do things like looking for changing prescriptions, retinoscopy, looking at the light reflex, associated conditions as well, like allergies and atopy and asthma and eye rubbing and all those things and Down syndrome. It is so important for everyone to be aware that keratoconus can come up really at any age, but very commonly, like you said, in your late teens, 20s. So we see it all the time.
Yeah, that's what I kind of realized by the time I was 30, that the disease isn't so much rare, but the doctors and the technology to diagnose it, it was unfortunately rare at the time.
Right. And it's becoming more common, but still not in every single practice. And then as far as pellucid and keratoconus, there are differing thoughts here. Some people think it's a continuum. I think that the important thing is that we're going to treat the same way. And so we can cross-link to strengthen the cornea. We can use specialty contact lenses to rehabilitate vision. And yes, the designs are different that we use, especially when it comes to scleral lenses, but there are ways to treat both that are actually quite similar. And then the snowboarding and the low contrast, that was super interesting because I have a lot of patients. I'm here in Northern California. We're very close to Lake Tahoe. So I have a lot of patients who ski a lot, and scleral lenses have been so helpful for so many of them, but I haven't thought so much about that low contrast situation, which is right on.
Yeah. And if you're doing it at a high level, you're in really critical situations and you're having to make split second decisions. And sometimes you get that really flat light. If you have functional eyeballs, then you can manage that, but it's hard enough in good light if you don't have the right
direction.
They
can be very dangerous situations too.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So, do
you have any family of like poor vision, or do you personally have any history of allergies or eye rubbing or anything like that?
Oh yeah, I was a big time rubber. I thought it was because I grew up on a farm and I thought it was just dusty, and I had eye allergies, but I'd sit there on the couch for like hours and just rub my eyes. And it was like it never made it better, but you just couldn't stop. And we tried all kinds of stuff, saline, and I don't really have that issue anymore. And I wonder if maybe because the sclerals kind of like, they take up so much of my, sorry, dog. They take up so much of the eyeball surface that maybe they're just not noticed. I don't know.
We love your dog.
Oh, okay. His name's Tiago.
They love the podcast too. A lot of people say that getting a diagnosis of keratoconus is a relief, even if it's a condition that they never heard of before. Do you remember how you felt when a doctor finally put a name to your vision symptoms?
Sure. Yeah. Initially, I was terrified because the way that it had been presented to me was just this wildly debilitating thing. And it was like, oh my gosh, what a coincidence. I have this disease as well that was presented as so rare. Initially, I think I was shocked and I couldn't believe it. I called my friends that I used to coach for. I was like, guess what? Here I am, you know, same boat. And I started off wearing all kinds. I think I've worn every kind of lens there is, starting with when they just thought it was a bad astigmatism, all the different torics and different types of monthly or dailies. And eventually they said, we got to put you in RGPs. And that was probably the most miserable 2 years for all the reasons we know, the tilting, and it just always felt like you had sand in your eyes. And so I became one of those people, and I'll answer your question about my family too. I started just trying to make it work with glasses. And this was before the keratoconus diagnosis. I just was squinting through life and I was still really scared to drive at night. There's so many really sketchy situations where you just can't see for a few seconds because a car's passing in the oncoming lane. Oh. Yeah, really, really scary stuff. And also you just had these headaches from squinting at everything all day. I really feel like when most of your life you've had sharp vision, your mental acuity is dependent on it. So you lose that huge data input system and your thoughts don't feel clear anymore. You feel lethargic. I'd always been this like really high energy, ambitious person. And I just felt lazy and unmotivated. And it really started to affect me at so many levels. And so to get the keratoconus diagnosis, there was an element of hope, but I didn't know that there were so many great ways to treat it. And like I said, it was one of those milestone moments where you remember everything. And leaving the clinic that day, and it was initially in hybrids, but I could see details. I could see leaves on trees. I could see all these things. I didn't have glasses on my face. And I remember welling up and just becoming really emotional right there in the parking lot. Like, oh my gosh, I never thought I'd see like this again.
That's amazing. It's amazing, the leaves on trees and just the detail that you can see.
Yeah.
And we were actually sharing a story this week about a patient who was just looking and staring at the leaves on the trees for like 15 minutes. He was just sitting there looking at the leaves on the trees because he could see them and he was so excited.
It's crazy, but they're beautiful and you've just been living without them. And then the other part was that like that mental sharpness started to return. Yes. And I felt like myself again. It was like, this is so cool. And the hybrids weren't a perfect solution. They were the best thing I'd had in a long time. And then I happened to have a friend in Houston where I was living at the time who was in school and called me one day and said, we're doing a study to develop this wavefront guided scleral lens. It's a 5-year study. You got to come once a week. We'll pay you to do it. And I was like, don't worry about that. Let's do it. Let's dive into this. This sounds awesome. And I was resistant because I was like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, I'm seeing better than I have in a long time. And she pushed and pushed and pushed. You got to try sclerals. Okay. And I'm so glad I did, except for the fact that they were even more difficult. I already struggled with insertion with every lens I ever had. And these things were like, wow, that is something. But how do you get these in?
Which I think is going to lead into lens space here.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit more about the study. What did it involve? 5 years once a week?
5 years once a week, trying on multiple lenses. I've had so much fluorescein in my eyes that like they should still glow under a black light to this day.
You're swimming in fluorescein.
Yeah, totally. Every week we would be putting on a variety of different lenses, and there was a team of doctors I became good friends with after 5 years. Still correspond with some of them. So you'd put on lenses, you would go do a low contrast test, and then you would do the wavefront machine over and over and over again for about an hour every week. One fun memory from that study was on the very first day, I was sitting there waiting for something to happen. And I looked at the eye chart, and it was one of the ones that start with D-A-O-E-G-N-U-S. And I told the doctor, oh, that's so clever. That's actually Dao Agnus is, it's Latin for the gift of sight or the gift of vision. And he goes, no way, that's so cool. And then years later, I was talking to him about, did you actually believe me? Because I completely made that up. I don't know. I don't speak Latin or anything like that. And his face went totally blank. And he's like, I've told that to so many people in the last
But well, it's a great group there at the University of Houston.
I'll yeah, they're that. Amazing. I don't know if we're allowed to like name drop here, but Dr. Chi Wen and Dr. Roxana Hamadi. Saw them every single week. And
they're fantastic.
Wonderful people. Fantastic. So I was one of those people that would have a soaked countertop, one of those blue paper bibs. It took so many times. I couldn't do it. I needed to hold my eye open and I needed to have Dr. Hamadi mostly putting these things in. And it was kind of futile because she's not going to be there tomorrow when you have to do this in your bathroom. You don't have the doctor support there. You're going to have to figure it out. And I'm sure you hear about it all the time where they're like, well, go punch a hole in a cup and put your little scleral holder in there. Okay, well, all right, that I can do that. And then I was like, I just kept having these ideas of why not make it a little more gentle for your eye? Why not make it something that's really portable, really easy to travel with? Why not have it be something that catches all of that runoff solution and not make a mess on your countertop every day, not waste so many paper towels? And so I kept tinkering with things and I would bring in my latest contraption because I had these appointments every single week and they mostly just laughed for the first few years. There was one that was really funny. It was like, it was the cup, right? But I'd cut the bottom off of it and I put it on the top and I'd suspended it by like rubber bands. So that you had almost like this trampoline effect. Didn't work at all, but it was all because I wanted something that was a little more gentle. And I eventually did figure that out down the line, how to make it a little nicer to your eye.
I understand that you're using a 3D printer to create the prototypes of LensBase.
Initially, I 3D printed a whole bunch of different prototypes. 3D printing's too slow and expensive to do anything at scale. So we injection mold everything now, but we use all antimicrobial stuff. Dr. Nguyen was like so adamant that anything I came up with needed to be super easy to sanitize, really, really clean, had to be the right materials. I can get into the design features later.
Yes, get into the design features. I was talking to Mary the other day and I had it on my desk.
Oh, cool.
I was playing with it and talking about it. So tell everyone, I'm curious how you came up with that size.
Sure. It just seemed like the perfect size. There's just enough room for my hands. I have kind of big hands. It was the right height from the countertop. I like to get my elbows down in a nice little base. Let me back up a little bit. Like years into this study, when I kept bringing these funny things in, they said, you know, there's other inventions that kind of try to do what you're trying to do here. And I was like, why didn't you tell me about them? And they said, well, they're silly. They don't really do much more than your cup at home does, but they're hundreds of dollars. They're cost prohibitive for most patients. And they're like, we have a few. And they took me to this like back closet and dusted them off and showed me. So a big thing in my mind was always, how do you make this accessible for anyone? You can't have electronics in this thing because then your production costs skyrocket. You have to ask several hundred dollars for them. You don't want to have to change your batteries on this when you're traveling and it would like pack into a small profile and really easy to toss in your backpack or something like that.
It's very compact.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And it works without the addition of any electronics too. If you look at that base, the center of that base is elevated to catch as much ambient light as possible. And the other part I think that a lot of people don't realize is when you put a lens in it and you fill that lens with solution, you're creating almost like a magnifying glass. And as you get closer to it, it really does magnify anything. So if you're going to shine a bright light through that, it's going to be even more intense. And that's not something I want to do first thing in the morning, generally. So it's actually a lot of light that gets through with lens base, but not an overwhelming amount. And I've done it in dimly lit tents and no lights on in the bathroom, just a little bit of ambient window light. And it works beautifully. So I started 3D printing, and I would send in all these drawings, and everybody was like NDA'd, but there was just, I found this really, really cool group of prototypers in Fort Worth. And they had similar scalability concerns with a lot of them. I came up with some wildly over-engineered ideas, 6 different prototypes. And it was something that I just tinkered with over the years. I didn't have all the time in the world to mess with it. So when I had a few ideas, I would make some drawings and I'd send them to the lab, and then they'd send me some CAD images. I'd go, I think maybe we should tweak this or that, or ooh, it has this sort of frog leg design, these little elbows in it, which once it was a snap together design, I was like, well, I don't want the saline to run through those holes you snapped it into and onto your countertop. That kind of defeats one of the value adds. So we added these little elbows that guides the solution right down into the tray and keeps that countertop clean. So yeah, 3D printing was a huge resource for the longest time. I got a lot of prototypes that way. And in 2001, I sat back and I thought, I can't think of anything to make this better. I think this is ready. And so I filed for a utility patent, which we received a full utility patent within 14 months on the first pass, which I'm told is unheard of, and got all set up to manufacture in Hong Kong and did some fundraising. And then I had a year to get everything straight with the FDA and become a registered medical device, which takes absolutely forever. In that year, I had a lot of friends that wanted to try it. I had my prototype, and I needed it to work for soft lenses too. So I spent that time while we were waiting for the FDA making the necessary tweaks to be able to service soft lenses. And it does, which is really cool.
That's awesome. So what are you hearing from customers and doctors who've used the lens base?
They love it. From the soft lens side, they just say, wow, it just holds the lens better. I don't personally know other people that use sclerals, so I haven't gotten to like really dig into those conversations. But so far, the response from the industry has been amazing. I was meeting with a lens specialist the other day here in Denver, and he flat out said, yeah, every pair of sclerals should come with one of these. This is so obvious. This is so cool. There's 2 lens companies, Valley Contacts out of Oregon, and then AccuLens here in Denver, who are promoting it to their entire doctor and patient base. We're going to be co-exhibiting in San Diego in a couple of weeks, AccuLens and I.
Oh, wonderful. And ICSC. That's great.
Yeah. Even from the very beginning, the first time I brought it into an eye clinic, because I knew I was going to be fitting some new sclerals that day, she said, where did you get that? And I said, I made it. And she said, what's our cost? How do we get that? It's just been so cool just that this thing you've tinkered with for a decade is all of a sudden something people want to use. And it means the world to me.
What an inspiring story. So tell us how we get it, how my patients are interested or doctors are interested. How do we get lens base?
Our goal now is to give that same sense of restored faith to keratoconus patients that the right lenses will change your world and you're not going to mind putting them in every day. It's not going to be the worst part of your morning. It's going to be easy and it's going to make this sustainable in your life. But you asked where you could find it. Thelensbase.com. They're available there. They're $35.
Well, I think it's great to have a resource to know that we can look on the website and okay. Then we'll have a link to that as well.
Okay.
I'll send it to the podcast.
Yep. I'll send you guys that. So.
Yeah. Perfect. Mark, thank you so much for joining us and inspiring us on the Clearly KC podcast. For all of our listeners, thank you so much for joining us on Clearly KC. Please listen to all the episodes of the Clearly KC podcast on Podbean or your favorite podcast app to subscribe and get future episodes. For now, I'm Dr. Melissa Barnett. See you next time on Clearly KC.
Thank you.